city. Let us not be satisfied with just giving money. Money is not enough. Money can be got. But they need your hearts to love them. So spread your love everywhere you go. It was Mother Teresa of Calcutta who offered those words. But that's why she's Mother Teresa. As for the rest of us, well, it takes some careful thought when we consider the joys and, frankly, agony of giving. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. On today's program, 'tis the season to be pensive and pragmatic about giving and about accepting gifts of varying values with grace. With us once again to help us through these conundrums is Dr. Bruce Lease, Professor of Family Medicine at KU. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Lease.
Thank you very much. As always, it's great to be here.
'Tis the season. So why do we give?
Well, actually, giving has a long history. Gifts go all the way back into ancient times when they did animal sacrifices. Biblical and pre-biblical times, that was their version of gift giving. It was to God or their gods. So we do it to some extent because it's a tradition.
And part of that tradition is based on gift giving as a form of sacrifice of self.
Yeah, and without that, gifts give very little. It's when it's self that's put into it, that's when it really, really matters. We give gifts so that we could be connected. We can be connected to other people. That's the major part of it. At this point in time.
You mentioned the Bible. You mentioned the connection of gift giving to ancient times. Where do we learn about what it means to give, as you just said?
Well, sitting around the dinner table, sitting in the living room, sitting in the car with our family members as children, what our parents and significant people around us say to us when we're little sticks with us for life. So if gift giving is just a big old exchange orgy and it has little depth, and that's what we learn. And if it's a little bit that means a lot and said from the heart, then that's what we adopt. We learn it from our parents, just about everything.
So the methods and components of giving are very important via the gift exchange orgy or the stripped down gift giving. That culture is important, especially when ingrained in kids. What are the components of giving? What reactions do we elicit when giving? Are there four or six things, maybe a list?
It's interesting. Some people have talked about the four S's of giving: surprise, suspense, sacrifice, and sharing.
Break down each one of those for us, if you will.
Well, a good way to look at it, I don't want to confuse anyone by saying now from four to six, but a good way to look at it is what the perfect gift involves. And there are six criteria that make the perfect gift, and those criteria, those six, have elements of the four S's. So when the gift itself reflects some sacrifice by the giver, that could include the time it takes to find or plan the gift or how it was presented, so some sacrifice on the giver's part. When the giver is motivated, that's number one. Number two, when the giver is motivated to giving joy, when you can see that the giver, even if it's a little tiny gift that has little personal meaning, just the joyful giver is number two in the perfect gift. When it's a luxury, when it's not a quart of milk that you were told you needed to pick up on the way home, when it's a luxury, number three. When it's appropriate to the recipient, number four. When it's a surprise, that's many people believe that's the part of the perfect gift, and when the recipient's pleased. So that all those I think are really good criteria for the perfect gift.
Tell us about the suspense angle of that. Nat King Cole talks about tiny tots with their eyes all aglow, the anticipation that we all remember as kids, either going downstairs or going upstairs or going to the basement or going outside, whatever our environment was, there was a suspense based on what we would receive.
Yeah, in childhood, a lot of it is what's going to happen on the morning that the gifts are supposed to start pouring in, whether you celebrate whatever holiday you celebrate or if it's a birthday. The anticipation that tomorrow's the big day that the gifts start pouring in, that's suspense for children. For adults, it could be as simple as being told, "Wow, I'm really excited about your birthday." That creates suspense. Unfortunately, some of the suspense in unhappy relationships, some of the suspense comes from wondering if one will even get a gift.
Right, and it leads to anxiety, as we definitely will get into in this hour. We live in a very patriarchal society, Dr. Lise, and naturally men and women differ in their perceptions and behaviors regarding giving. Can you expound on those differences?
Yeah, what I'm about to say is based on research that is done on men and women regarding gift giving. So while some of these ideas are mine, I can't take credit for them, nor can I claim they're true. I just know what the research tells me. First of all, women are generally the caretakers in American society. They're more focused on making sure people feel okay. Therefore, it makes a lot of sense that they would be the ones that do a lot of the shopping and gift giving. They tend to spend more time in the in the shopping process. They tend to buy more gifts. And again, this is all research-based. They tend to report enjoying giving gifts more than men say that they enjoy giving gifts. And women during the Christmas holidays, they are more likely. Now, I don't want anybody out there to think
they're more likely. This is based on research, people.
And also, you know, it's research and it's groups. And
right.
So, of course, in a group, there'll be all those men that do these things, but still the women are a major proportion. So women tend to be in charge of shopping and gift wrapping and cooking and cleaning. So it's no wonder that one study found that older men are the happiest adults during the Christmas season. Older men are the happiest adults.
I'm sure.
Yeah, because the women are in the kitchen generally.
Grandpa's done his deal. He can sit back in the chair, enjoy the game.
Fall asleep.
Let the kids come run to him rather than vice versa.
So women really, really do take a more amplified or magnified caretaking role in the gift-giving process during holidays and birthdays.
And so by virtue of that, are they psychologically more predisposed to giving, even based on the research, what you see, based on what you see on the commercials, based on what you see in some homes, based on all the women you see out in the shopping complexes and everywhere, psychologically, are they more intrinsically giving?
If intrinsically means genetically predisposed or biologically, I have to say I can't even touch that one because I don't know. I don't know, but I do know that in our society, in American society, women are more socialized than men to pay attention to feelings. It's cool for a little girl to say, "Mommy, my doll feels sad." Boys are not acculturated to think or express themselves that way. So,
nor in some circles encouraged to think that way about the little doll.
Right. That is correct.
Why is gift giving on the flip side of that? We talked about women being giving. We talked about people being giving and naturally wanting to give. Why is gift giving then such a source of anxiety for some people, Dr. Lise?
Well, it's a source of anxiety because if you reflect back on those six criteria that I mentioned of perfect gifts, that's a tall order. And if there are 30 people in your family that you're supposed to achieve that perfect gift-giving experience with, it can be completely overwhelming. Gifts symbolize a lot of different things. And so the more one is concerned, one of the things that a gift symbolizes is reciprocity. I give to you because I want a certain kind of relationship with you and I want you to reciprocate. And whether it's I want you to give back to me this, I spend $100, I want you to spend $100. That's not all there is to reciprocity. Reciprocity is I want to know that you care enough to have done more than just give me a gift card from a local grocery store. So the pressure to give back equally, to complete that circle of connectedness, that's a lot of pressure for most people.
A lot of pressure indeed. This is Central Standard, live on 89.3 KCUR, streaming in real time on KCUR.org. Dr. Bruce Lise, a professor of family medicine at KU, is our guest. It's all about surprise, suspense, sacrifice, and sharing as we talk about the psychology of giving. I'm your host, Jabulani LaFall, Kansas City. What is your favorite gift of all time, either conferred to you or received, conferred by you or received by you? What does giving mean to you? Let Dr. Bruce Lise work with you. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can give us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org or give us your input at Facebook or at KCURCST via Twitter, via our Twitter feed. Let's talk about the Santa effect. We mentioned in our show about lying, as well as our shows about being resistant to change. We deal with dreams and fantasies as a kid. Tell us about Santa and the source, not getting too deep into Santa, but the source of gift giving in our eyes as kids.
Santa is an important character to think about when one thinks about this holiday. I'm obviously stating the obvious. I thought I'd do a little research into that and learned, didn't know the exact ages, but approximately children between 3 and 8 years old are most likely to believe that fantasy that Santa brought the gifts. And a lot of parents struggle with, you know, how am I going to deal with it when my now 8-and-a-half-year-old doesn't believe in Santa or finds out from me that it was me creeping around putting the gifts there. So we start kids out with that fantasy. I say we as a society, of course, the religions that don't involve themselves with Santa.
And it all depends on the acculturation of Santa. For instance, in my family, there were big productions put on, but you learn probably within that research control group that you just mentioned, between 3 and 8, you learn that it actually was Mommy. And for me, I know growing up, I actually appreciated that more.
That it was your parents.
That it was actually my parents, yeah, or my grandparents or my aunts.
I always thought it was an interesting fantasy. I guess the same would be true for the tooth fairy. It must be 3 to 8 years old where that gift comes when you lose that tooth.
Right. And how has holiday giving affected the psyche as we grow into adults when we look at the role of Santa in our larger pervasive society, the emphasis commercially on holiday giving? How does that affect our psyche as families?
Well, third parties really influence our thinking about giving and our giving behaviors. Third parties like advertisers, our friends, all kinds of third parties influence our giving behavior. So that's all part of the mix.
Before we go to the phones, you and your wife have a very interesting gift ritual this time of year. Tell us about it, Dr. Lease.
And I, preparing to talk about this, of course, we had great conversations about this. We do give gifts to people. We enjoy giving gifts to people. In the last couple of weeks, we've had non-Christmas, Hanukkah reasons to be with people for birthdays, etc. And we really enjoy finding a gift and bringing it to people. So we enjoy gift giving, and we love to give to our kids. But we have never, ever developed the habit of giving gifts to each other.
And why is that?
Well, at one point, I think early in our relationship, we said, you know, do we need to give each other anything this year? And we both said, not really. We kind of have everything we want, and it's more fun to shop for the rest of the family and friends. So we did not get anything, and that was 10 years ago. And I don't think we have – no, we have not ever.
And you guys are cool with that.
Well, I asked my wife this past weekend, not thinking that we were going to talk about us giving each other a gift. I said to her, what's the best gift you've ever gotten in your lifetime? And I think you can guess what she said. The best gift she had ever gotten in her lifetime was not having the pressure of having to find gifts for each other.
The gift of being liberated from anxiety.
That's
quite a wonderful gift.
Well said. Well said. That's exactly right. And she really meant it. It's caring deeply for somebody and finding the perfect gift is not easy.
Well, the Temptations say, give love on Christmas Day. And if you want to hear that, I won't sing that here. But if you want to hear that, that's up on KCR.org. We brought our music critics in on the other half of the show last week to talk about Christmas songs. So in the spirit of giving, someone is about to give us a Christmas story here. And his name is Hawkeye from Overland Park.
Yes, good morning. I have a question for your guest, whether he's familiar with the neurological research that recently has been coming out through fMRI studies, the studies of what you want to call giving, and, you know, maybe if there is any studies that he can cite that can show us that, let's say, conservatives who typically tend to have larger amygdala, the most primitive part of the brain that is responsible for fear and human feelings, if, for example, conservatives gift more than liberals, if there is any, you know, anything in that regard that you can cite.
Whoa, Hawkeye, you're getting heavy. Are you kind of talking about, let me understand you correctly, are you talking about the role of brain size or the role of physiological makeup in giving? The quadrants of the
correct,
brain that are used in giving? Is that what you're talking about?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, there's been quite a few studies recently. For example, researchers found, I believe it was a study in England about a year ago, where researchers found that larger anterior cortex portions of our brain tend to be in parts of liberals, while larger amygdala, an area that is linked to fear, feelings of disgust and emotions, what you want to call a primitive, you know, crocodilian brain of humans, is responsible for, you know, most primitive and emotional feelings of humans. If there is any studies that are connecting portions of our brain to our giving, if you're aware of anything like that.
Well, Hawkeye, let's let Dr. Bruce Leese handle that.
I actually looked at the research on the differences between political self-reported political parties. I don't know that I can relate any of that to gift giving.
Right.
What I can say is that we are biochemical creatures, biochemical electrical creatures, and everything we do and everything we say and everything we feel has a biochemical base. And when you go back to the four S's of giving, surprise, suspense, sacrifice, and sharing, there's a lot of brain and hormonal activation that is involved in those feelings. Surprise gets you going. Suspense gets you going. Sacrifice gets you going. Sharing warms you up. Those are feelings that have biochemical bases, and it should not be a surprise to anyone that you can look at biochemical processes and understand how they could be triggered.
And so we know and understand that there is a physiological as well as psychological as well as emotional component to giving.
Well, I think that the best gifts are a fun emotional roller coaster, with the downs being only kind of anticipation, nothing unhappy, but anticipation of what's coming next.
Well, Dr. Leese, you handle emotional roller coasters really well, and we're going to go to the phones now and let Kathy give us something, Kathy.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Is that Kathy with a C or Kathy with a K?
It's with a K.
All right.
It's so funny. We're all so proud of that. I don't know why, but we are. thank you for your show. Okay, my gift. The best gift I ever received, I still have, and that's my life. I am a product of a biracial parentage in 1950s, and they gave me up for adoption. My adoptive family, they are white, and that was a brave and amazing thing to do in 1956. They adopted me and gave me a beautiful life. And as hokey as that sounds, you know, what could be better?
That is not hokey.
It's not hokey at all. It's actually very deep and very poignant. Her gift is her life. Talk about that, Dr. Leese. Thank you, Kathy.
Well, the real experience of giving and receiving is an emotional one. It's not a material one. And that's why intangible gifts tend to pack a really nice punch, a nice positive punch, if I can mix metaphors there. You know, the tangible gifts are the ones that you find in the store, and they are goods and not generally services. And it's kind of a little pop, and there's the gift, and do you like it or not? But the intangibles are experiences, like you were saying, the gift of life. They're experiences. They are experiential. They're psychological. They're emotional. You know, the chance to relax, the chance to retreat, the chance to have fun, the chance to be surprised. Those can all occur in a gift that is not a physical gift. And the gift of life, of course, is the ultimate. And so you sound like a joyful person. Gift receivers who experience joy at just the miracle of life, I think, would be the easiest and the best to give gifts to.
Kathy, our last caller, is a very joyful person. She's thankful for her life. She says it's the greatest gift But she brings up an interesting point with her assertions about the greatest gift of all for her. What about demographic, cultural, and socioeconomic circumstances? Kathy mentioned she's a biracial child. How do these differences play in gift giving?
I happen to have read about that.
You happen to have read about that.
Yeah, whether you're – I feel lucky that I read this one last night. Whether you're rich or poor does not determine how much joy you have on Christmas. In fact, I have a little bit of research about happiness during Christmas, if you ask me later.
We'd like to hear it.
But anyway, somebody with little money and somebody with a lot of money isn't going to differ in how much joy they get from giving or receiving. Interestingly, the research shows that wealthy people are more likely to give more gifts because they are able to give more gifts. It's not that they necessarily get more expensive gifts proportionate to their income. So it is a factor. People with less money are not unhappier. And, you know, one might even speculate that people with more money have more choices to make, and that may make gift giving more difficult.
But we're looking at a quality and quantity differential, right?
Yeah. And also, if you go back to the idea that the intangible gifts could be the best gifts, it costs nothing to say, my gift to you this year is my time. You've always asked me to participate in housework, chores, you've asked me to go to the park with you, you've asked me to go for walks with you, you've asked me to do all these things. My gift to you is to stop everything I'm doing and show you how much I care about you by just giving you my time. I'm gonna go out and get I don't eat beef, but I'm gonna go out and get a pound of hamburger and some rice and some vegetables, and I'm gonna cook you a meal, even though I've never cooked in my life. That's an intangible gift that costs next to nothing.
That's that sacrifice and sharing that you talked about. And I'm sure there would be some suspense if you're cooking a burger from somebody on how it's going to taste.
Yeah, that's right.
Jill writes in to us at centralstandard@kcur.org. When they asked if Santa was real, I told my kids that Santa is the spirit of giving and that we can all be part of that spirit. So Jill is very savvy with what she told her kids. Didn't lie, didn't also sugarcoat, says Santa is the spirit of giving. So
actually,
kids,
that's,
he might be the spirit flying through the air.
That's actually preparing your children well for the future, emphasizing that something as fun and colorful as Santa comes from an intangible spirit is a wonderful gift. That in itself was a gift to your children.
Beth writes, a few years ago, my income was cut in half and I found myself in a status closer to needing than giving. However, having been given a toothbrush by my dentist near my birthday, I thought, what a small item that everyone can afford. And thus, for the last 2 years, I have sent out an email in my company and neighborhood association asking for a toothbrush for my birthday, and I would deliver all my gifts to Operation Breakthrough. Shout out to Operation Breakthrough. The first year, Beth says she walked in with 245 toothbrushes, and this past year she delivered 1,350 toothbrushes. Sister Berta, who's actually been on this show, has noted that while food stamps can purchase lobster tails, you cannot buy a toothbrush. And Beth says, my community has made me a philanthropist of toothbrushes. She's literally, Beth is, giving smiles to people. Talk about that aesthetic.
Is it okay if I just say, wow, that's really cool?
It is really cool. And we'll go to the phones to see what really cool Barbara has to say. Welcome to Central Standard.
Oh, thank you very much. I was calling with a gift that I was given that was both tangible and intangible. A number of years ago, my mother was very ill, and I was providing her care, and I had a friend that would drop by the house, not knock on the door, not call in advance, and leave, you know, maybe movie tickets or a bottle of wine or a CD that he downloaded without any anticipation of a return call or any acknowledgement whatsoever. He did it purely to make my life better, happier, more livable at that time. And the intangible part of that was that it taught me a huge lesson about giving and how important it is to give gifts with maybe without so much emphasis on the thank you, on the acknowledgement, on how, you know, how it can make you feel as well. And it was just a huge, huge lesson in my life on how to give a gift.
Dr. Bruce Lee's chopping up with Barbara about her huge lesson on how to give and receive gifts.
I'd be happy to. What drives the gift-giving process is the process of reciprocity. We give wanting to receive something in return, and that is actually, that's not the curse of giving. I think that's the beauty of giving. Ultimately, what we want from others when we give a gift is some kind of connectedness. And Barbara, I think your name was Barbara.
Her name is Barbara.
Yes,
Barbara, the magic Santa of a friend, family member who did that for you, wanted to feel connected to you. And she apparently knew your spirit, your warmth, your fun countenance, whatever it was. She knew you well enough that she could imagine that there was some joy and connectedness each time that happened. And she got back what she put out, which is tender, kind, generous feelings. So when I talk about the reciprocity, the I give something to you because I want something back, it's not a bad thing. I mean, some people turn it into
a bad. Right, I agree with that.
Yeah, some people.
I agree with that 100%. But at this particular point in time in my life, I didn't have a lot to give back because I was giving so much to my mother at the time, and I was emotionally drained. So for me, at that point in time, it was really the perfect gift, the perfect way to receive a gift. I had other people that would come by and bring flowers, and it was, or, you know, something. But there was just such a freedom in this exchange with this friend of mine that, of course, I acknowledged it, and they knew that I
to this day
appreciated it.
To this day.
Well, thank you very much for your thoughts, Barbara. I guess reciprocity isn't always about getting something back, but about getting that feeling, Dr. Lees.
Yeah, I mean, the connectedness that one wishes for in giving a gift will be reciprocated. It'll be, for lack of a better term, the karma, what you get back. If you do it without caring much, there's a chance you'll get that karma back. Right. I will say something else that was triggered by Barbara's comments. When I was a little boy, and actually through my entire childhood, we were absolutely dirt poor. We were on welfare, food stamps, lived in, for all intents and purposes, the ghetto. That was the way I grew up in New York. And even though we had nothing materially, we never had new cars, knew nothing. Clothing was from Salvation Army, etc. Even though all that was our life, I'd come home from school and my mom would have somebody who was less fortunate than us at the house, and she'd be making soup and conversation, and you know, I'd come home to a joyful home, and it wasn't a materialistic thing, which is probably why I don't feel a huge need to give material gifts. My hope for everyone listening is that what they will give is so much a part of themselves year round that it comes back to them reciprocally, and the gift process goes on all year, and it doesn't have to be material.
Well, Dr. Lisa, I'm a child of welfare as well, which is why my mom popped in that Temptations tape and taught me to give love on Christmas Day, and that's, you know, what I'm about to this day. We've been chatting with gifts and the nature of giving with Dr. Bruce Lease, a professor of family medicine at KU. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we discuss the types of giving and what the movie Citizen Kane has to do with true value. Kansas City, what priceless gift have you received over the years? What does gift giving mean for you, personal gratification, and development? Dr. Bruce Lease, he's professor of family medicine at KU, 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. Call in and talk to him or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. In Wichita, Kansas this year, something extraordinary is happening. Across from the library in Wichita, volunteers have set up a sort of cafeteria triage unit and are exchanging food for hugs. Food for hugs. News reports say some come for the hugs first and then the food. Dr. Bruce Lee's professor of family medicine at KU is here continuing to school us in the second part of the hour on the psychology of giving. And in that psychology, some people prefer hugs first and then food. Kansas City, with giving as a particular focus this time of year, we ask, what is your favorite gift of all time, conferred or received? What does it mean for you to give? Call in and share your stories as well as any questions you might have for Dr. Bruce Lee's at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. And we'll go straight to the phones with Carol. Carol, welcome to Central Standard. Christmas Carol, welcome.
Thanks. I just wanted to say, for the most part, I dislike giving and receiving gifts because I think in our society it's kind of lost its meaning. People feel obligated and they give gifts. And my sister-in-law, you know, when I don't appreciate a gift, my sister-in-law says it's the thought that counts. But I don't think people are thinking anymore, you know. I think they feel obligated and they just quickly find whatever they can find for whatever price they want to pay, and they don't really think about gifts anymore. I'd much rather get a gift out of the blue because it's something that somebody found that they knew I would like, or vice versa.
It's a little humbuggish, but Dr. Bruce Lee, talk about Carol's assertion that it's the thought that counts, but people aren't really thinking anymore.
First and foremost, I'm going to use that word connectedness. If a gift doesn't establish a sense of connectedness, then the gift is misguided or the receiver doesn't feel connected with the giver. So, Carol, are you still there, Carol?
Yes.
I assume you like being connected to people?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So whatever you do to connect to them, whether it's by saying I love you, by hugging them, by making them dinner, by bringing them, you know, chicken soup when they're sick, whatever you do to make people feel good that you want to be connected to is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
So since you are somebody who likes connectedness, you actually do give gifts, but they're not the tangible ones. I think what mm-hmm. you're taking issue with is tangible gifts.
Right,
I looked a little bit at the economics of Christmas and giving, and if one isn't careful, it can turn into something that's superficial. So the challenge to everybody out there is to not let that happen. Just some of those numbers, 95% of Americans celebrate Christmas. This is just a list of some of the findings, research findings. The holiday dominates the month of December. Well, that's self-evident.
The holiday starts basically after Thanksgiving.
Right, and dominates the whole month of December. About 1/6 of all retail sales are related to Christmas. 1/6 of all retail sales. On average, 8 years ago, American families spent over $800 on Christmas gifts. Many people are still in debt 6 months after Christmas, and 5 million extra tons of trash are generated between Thanksgiving and New Year's.
Well, that's definitely a humbug, and kind of along the lines of what Carol was talking about, how we've gotten out of the spirit of giving and more into the spirit of buying. So from both a giving and receiving perspective, what's the psychology behind giving and receiving these intangible gifts?
Well, the psychology is that the more intangible it is, the more creativity and effort and sacrifice and surprise is often involved. So I talked about the perfect gift criteria early. An intangible could be a ski trip. It's not something you unpack. But an even more intangible might be cooking dinner for, you know, if you have adult kids, 20-year-olds, and they come back from college and you tell them you're going to cook for a dozen of their best friends. That's very intangible, and it's a lot of giving of oneself. What I would recommend to Carol, by the way, is to seek a group of people that isn't like the ones she has described. And again, that's, I think, when you don't lean on crutches to get what you want in life, like people who give gifts to say, hey, even though I've been creepy to you all year, I really love you.
Right. Right.
If you seek people who really connect well and give well and love well, you won't have that. You won't experience the people around you like Carol does. So seek those people that know how to love well, be connected, and give.
Sherry in Leawood, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. Well, first, the best gift I ever got was my daughter was unexpectedly born on my birthday, so that was awesome. But I had to call up my mother-in-law, who most of it lives 2,000 miles away, so permission to speak freely has been granted. She will give a gift and then dine out on that gift all year. Remember when I gave you so-and-so? Oh, you're not bringing the kids?
Wow, wow.
I mean, it's a gift that keeps on giving because 2 years ago we made like a scoreboard and we kept a tally of how many times in 365-day period she mentioned the gift she had given us.
You know,
I want to know what is it about people that do that, because I've kind of seen that, maybe not to that extent, you know, with other people, but, you know, they the gift lives on.
It's very common. It's more common than you think. Dr. Bruce Lees, take it away. Tell her how common it is.
I've had the really, really, really wonderful fortune of getting to work with Andreas Lindsay and Jabalani here on the show every month, and there is a whole collection of audio podcasts that are on the website, on the KCOR website. That reminds me of
management.
The anger.
Right.
There are two shows that relate closely to this. One of them is anger and the other one's coping with the holidays.
Right.
People, what you're describing is passive aggressive behavior. It's giving with one hand and taking with the other. And,
wow. That's a good way to put it.
And I think what I advocated in those shows, and I'll advocate it again, is to just, I don't want to say call them out on their behavior, but it sure sounds like that when it's in my head. Say to your mother, Mom, what are you trying to accomplish by reminding me of all the gifts you give me? You must feel terribly, terribly inadequate at what you're giving me now.
Now, Sherry, is this your mom or your mother-in-law?
Mother-in-law.
It's my mother-in-law.
Right.
And, I mean, and it's not like they're like awesome gifts that, you know, she would be worthy of me bowing down and, you know, kissing her feet. I mean, they're mediocre gifts at best, but it just... I guess we just find the humor in it, which provides us with laughter all year. So that's how my husband and I look at it.
Well, see, if you don't mind the behavior, if you want it to keep going, then you're doing the right thing. If you'd like to see it end, when people are passive aggressive, when their gift is a hand grenade whose ring has been pulled, and you want to put a stop to it, a kind way to put a stop to it is to say, you know, where you're really going with this. But it sounds like you're having more fun with it than pain and suffering. So I guess I wouldn't advise anything change if that's the case.
Decorate that scoreboard, Sherry. Maybe decorate it for Christmas and give it to her as a joke.
But don't reciprocate the passive aggressiveness by being passive aggressive.
Yeah, don't reciprocate it.
No, because it's a bad role model for our children.
I would agree.
I have to do that.
Thank you, Sherry. Happy holidays to you. This time of year, Dr. Lees, giving turns into almost a social ritual. When we hear about Sherry's story, when we hear about Carol, who hated the culture of giving and taking on Christmas, there's a lot of giving out of a sense of tradition and obligation. Is this a bad thing, Dr. Bruce Lees, sometimes? Is it a bad thing? Giving out of a sense of tradition and obligation?
The sense of obligation is a bad thing. I don't know how else to say it. I don't want to put lipstick on that pig.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with tradition if what it creates is a greater focus on connectedness and you follow through with good connecting behaviors, i.e. gift giving of that nature, then you're on the right track. So of those two reasons to give, obviously, I'm not a big fan of doing it out of obligation, which is why people are so unhappy.
Is it fair to say that giving out of a sense of obligation sort of puts you in sort of almost a guilt prison about giving?
Yeah. I don't know how imprisoning it has to be. Probably doesn't have to be.
It can be.
I feel like I need to meet this obligation and I don't really want to, but I'm going to make the most of it. That's how you keep from going into that obligation prison you described.
Obligation prisons are being discussed on a show about gifts with Dr. Bruce Lees, a professor of family medicine at KU. He's our guest. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live in real time at KCUR.org. Kansas City, what is your favorite gift of all time, either given or received? What does giving mean to you? Let Dr. Bruce Lees work with you on the psychology behind your giving. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Renee in Kansas City, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Your voice sounds very familiar, Renee.
It does. Well, Jabalani, I saw you last night. This is Renee Blanche.
Hi, Renee.
You're going to put me on blast. Hi. Renee Blanche,
Renee,
from Night Tides.
This is a gift to me.
You saw me last night. You're going to do
oh, my God.
You're going to do it like that on regional radio. Okay, oh, go ahead.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
No, last night in the studio. Yeah, let me
Yeah, in the studio, in the studio.
In the studio. In the studio. Right. Dr. Lise, this call, I wanted to send an email, but I've actually spent since May up to today. I've been given this gift, again, to be able to say to you and as face-to-face as I can to say thank you for the greatest gift that I've received. It happened in May, and that's the gift of forgiveness. I was listening to Central Standard. You were on, and for the first time in all the years that I thought I really understood forgiveness, I heard you that day, and my life has forever changed because I now understand what it means to forgive. So
wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Renee Blanche.
I don't know if I can go on. The goosebumps are overwhelming me.
Right.
I was going to say I'm a big fan of yours and got all excited once when I called the studio and you answered the phone. So
right.
Your call means a lot to me, and it makes all of this worth it. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Renee, for your call and for the jewels that you give when we have our talks here in the studio. The gift of forgiveness, Dr. Lise. Talk about that.
Well, first and foremost, it's a gift you give yourself.
Wow.
Carrying around chronic anger, irritation, finding reasons to say I'm right and they're wrong, or even the anger one has at oneself when they say, you know, I'm bad, I'm awful, I'm terrible. All of that, the panacea, the magic, the silver bullet, the magic pill that fixes all of that kind of pain is forgiveness. And I can't think of a better gift at the moment, especially given your call, Renee. It does nobody any good to harbor anger and those kinds of awful feelings. So, wow, thank you for that unexpected call again.
We have Sue in KC. Sue, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
One of the most meaningful gifts I ever received was from my partner. I'm a great ballet fan, and my partner gave me season tickets to the ballet. But the greatest part of that was the fact that she was giving her time because she is not a ballet fan.
I knew you were going to say that. That's awesome. That's really cool.
And she, the greatest part of that was that she went with me to each ballet for the entire season. So that was a great gift of time and love.
Well, let me just read the six criteria of a perfect gift, because every one of them, I think, is met by that gift. Number one, the perfect gift reflects sacrifice by the giver. And you said your partner isn't a ballet fan, so that's sacrifice.
Yes.
Motivated by giving joy, certainly your partner wanted to see you joyful. Well, a luxury. Well, ballet is a luxury. It's not something that everybody gets to see or do or experience. Appropriate to the recipient? Well, obviously. Surprise? Were you surprised?
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome.
By both of them.
And you're obviously pleased. That's all six. So now all of us have gotten proof by your call that it's possible to give the perfect gift, and that's just awesome.
Thank you, Sue, for your input.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Bye. Yeah, Merry
thank
happy
you.
Holidays. We're inundated this time of year, Dr. Lise, with feel-good stories about giving, It's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, A Christmas Carol. How do these tales of Christmas spirit inform our thoughts behind choices?
One of my favorite movies in the whole world is A Christmas Carol. Absolutely, because it's all about transformation. It's all about forgiveness. It's all about all of those awesome things. And I could watch it lots and lots and lots of times and never grow tired of it.
That's playing at the Rev. We interviewed the director. Plug for the show. It's archived on KCUR.org and at centralstandard.org.
I can tell you everything that was said. Actually, last night, the artist, and I forget the name of the part of the show that you guys do, but the artist was interviewed. Ebenezer. And that was
right.
Very cool.
Ebenezer Scrooge, the guy that played it. Steve Walker did that piece on
right.
Ebenezer Scrooge.
It was terrific. You know, there is a whole group of activities that occurs during the holidays. We spend time with family. We participate in religious activities. And I'm not saying everyone, but the majority of our society. We try to maintain traditions. We spend money. We receive gifts. We give gifts. We help others in need. and this will come out wrong, but then I'll fix it. We enjoy a lot of sensual aspects. And by that, I'm talking about the tastes of food and
right.
and
hugging, kissing,
all that
touching, yeah,
all
yeah.
that wonderful stuff, food and the smells and the sounds and all that stuff. It's interesting when they researched people who more or less enjoyed the holiday season between 18 and 80 years old. The most happy people were most involved with family and religious experiences separately, family and or religious experience. The least happy people reported spending most of the time spending money and receiving gifts. And one interesting outside kind of thing that they found was the people who engaged in environmentally conscious consumption practices reported they had happier holidays. The people who wrapped gifts in a pillowcase instead of the – how many tons of garbage did I say earlier? I don't remember. 5 million extra tons of trash.
5 million. Curiously, we talk about the Yuletide spirit. You mentioned the transformational nature of A Christmas Carol, Ebenezer going from Scrooge to philanthropist. But curiously though, Citizen Kane is actually one of your favorite case studies in assigning value to a gift. For those listeners who haven't seen this groundbreaking film, one of AFI's top 100 films of all time, tell us about the story on giving and what resonates with you. Rosebud.
Well, no, you tell the story.
Well, Rosebud is the sleigh that Charles Foster Kane, that's loosely based on William Randolph Hearst, got when he was a kid. And he was rich and ran for president and did all of these tycoonish, mogulish things. But on his deathbed, he remembers a simple Christmas sleigh from when he was a boy that he called Rosebud. Talk about that. You can have all the money in the world, but when you're on your dying bed, you're thinking about something you got when you were a boy at Christmas time, a gift that you got.
Yeah, and I tell people over and over and over and over again that it's not about the physical gift. It's about the feeling that comes with it. And what you're describing is a profoundly joyous moment in a human being's life. A transformational moment when the whole world seems at peace and everything is exactly right.
Let me ask you this. Have you not seen Citizen Kane?
I've not seen Citizen
well,
Kane.
Well, I'm going to give you the gift if you take some time to go look at it. That's a gift that keeps on giving. Very classic film. Marion Liberty shares on our show about giving, what do you do when you agree with family members that the adults will not exchange gifts, yet one of the sisters continues buying for everyone, making us all feel guilty? What do you think about Marion Liberty's comment?
I've actually had a number of people ask me about that. You know, what do you do when everyone agrees to not give gifts and somebody gives gifts? I, for lack of a better answer, I'd say, you know, kind of roll with punches. It's, you know, I wouldn't let it bother me. I do what I believe is right. I mean, that's the beauty of being an independent adult in a democracy, is you kind of get to pick what you really want to do. And if you don't want the present, if you don't want to give presents, don't give them. I wouldn't make any.
How do you release that guilt that Marion Liberty is talking about?
Well, we are what we think, us human beings. The way we think determines how we feel, and guilt comes from thinking bad thoughts. Bad thoughts were, I should give a gift. Maybe I'm doing something wrong here. I would just let go of the thoughts that it's really something to feel guilty about. Hope that's not an oversimplification.
And Marcy shares with us, some years ago, my husband and I suggested that the adults in the family exchange consumables. Now I look forward to getting together and going home with the jam my sister brought back from a trip, or the favorite coffee blend my brother found that year, along with the stories of how they came across these things. These are intangibles, right?
Yes, and my favorite pastime with friends, all my friends will tell you this, is cooking. I love to cook for people I love, and it's that feeling of making people happy and not having to pick out something that will be the be-all and end-all, and it's an activity, it's an intangible, and that's what I think of when I think of that situation.
Dr. Lise Iris and Casey writes in with a question, but a quick note for parents. It discusses the nature of Santa. So if your kids are in the backseat, turn this down for a few minutes, parents. Iris writes, my husband and I have discussed probably not enforcing the Santa Claus myth with our daughter in order to teach her clearly more about what it means to give a material gift. My question is, how might we teach her about Santa and the Santa myth in a way that would encourage a sort of nonchalance about where her peers would be concerned?
Did we get the age?
We don't know.
Yeah. I wouldn't take an active approach in trying to dispel the myth of Santa. I wouldn't take an active role in it. It's a battle not necessary to fight. I would simply say that let nature run its course, and when children ask the right questions, like is there really a Santa, that's when you start to answer them. Because kids will have a lot of children have a lot of questions that are complex and hard to answer. And whether there's a Santa is probably among the easiest of the questions you'll be asked.
When in doubt, Dr. Lease, should we just let nature run its course?
That's right.
With all of our decisions? Dr. Bruce Lease is a professor of family medicine at KU. His thoughts on giving and the motivations and values of giving have been properly moved and seconded. Dr. Lease, thank you so much for coming, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you for the gift of having me here.